Welcome back, WNST and Baltimore Positive. Today, we've moved from Baltimore, Don Mohler, to Annapolis. We're at the Maryland House. We're learning about, we've done so much in education and politics and the world and crime and meeting mayor candidates that you can find at Baltimore Positive. Today's all about hospitals and all about saving lives and making our hospital situation better in the state of Maryland.
Well, when we started 1 year ago, we said we wanted to get smarter. We wanted to have smart people on.
I'm learning.
And today's topic, as I've said a couple of times this morning, when you talk about hospital and hospital care and health care, I can't think of an issue that touches every single family in the United States of America. So who do we have, Nestor?
Jonathan Ringo is not just a doctor. It says MD here. He's also the president of Lightbridge Health and part of the Sinai Hospital, a family in Baltimore, the Lightbridge family, but Sinai. Let me reverse that.
Sinai.
Neil Meltzer will be upset with me if I do it that way. We're also joined by Bob Atlas, the president and CEO of the Maryland Hospital Association. Putting this on in Annapolis today, I think we've been here a couple of hours. We're learning about whatever the lobby is, but on behalf of people like my wife who spent the weekend in the emergency center, or Don's grandson who has long-term care to stay healthy and play all the sports that he plays and do the things he loves. But the state's very involved in this, and you all come down here and make sure that we're getting the right support from the governor and from the whole legislature.
Absolutely. I mean, so much of health care is either publicly paid for or publicly regulated or supported. And
we're all paying for it.
One way or another, and Annapolis is key for what we do. Session is 8 days old. Everybody's feeling very positive. We've been speaking individually with legislators. We had a good group this morning. They're showing a lot of support for the concerns of health care, and really we're all in it for the patients, for the people of Maryland. We've got 6 million people we take care of, and whether they are in our hospitals or in our outpatient facilities, we care for everybody across the state, and we want to make everybody healthier.
Well, Dr. Ringo, you're here too, and all of you using everyone who's a president or CEO down here today, what are the needs? What do you need from the governor, from the legislature, to make Sinai and Lightbridge function more effectively?
Well, I think one of the great things in Maryland is already we have a pretty amazing system if you look at every other state across the country. The waiver allows Maryland hospitals to really look at the total cost of care, look at the care that all patients need coming through our doors, regardless of who that payer is. Most other states in the country, there's a big difference in the care that health systems can provide, whether there's a commercial payer or a private government payer. Maryland, because of the unique features of the waiver, we can care for everyone.
Do me a favor, Doc. Pick up on that, because one of the things we talk about, we get smarter. We know that our listeners get smarter. When you talk about the waiver makes a difference in the state of Maryland, there are men and women out there sitting in the car, and they're saying, what's he talking about, the waiver? What's that mean? Tell people in a real simplistic way what the waiver is and why it matters
to
my family.
I think Bob's a much better person to answer that question than I am.
In very brief terms, Maryland, the only state in the country, has a special contract with the federal government that exempts our hospitals from the standard way that Medicare, the program for about 60 million seniors and disabled people, pays hospitals. And so we have this alternative arrangement where under this arrangement, Medicare and the program Medicaid for the poor folks and people with disabilities both pay fairly, not below cost. This allows commercial payers to pay less, actually. People who have employer-sponsored insurance get a benefit from this. Everybody pays equitably. Hospitals under this system are paid under what's called a fixed global budget. So their revenue is preset at the beginning of the year by this state regulatory agency called the Health Services Cost Review Commission. What that does is that creates stability, creates equity across the system in terms of where the payment is coming from, that it's fair across the board, and that enables hospitals like Sinai and all the rest of our hospitals to be able to do things that really benefit their communities, benefit people, doesn't require them for revenue purposes to have to get people in for really complex care. They can deliver wellness care, they can reach out in the community and do things that really benefit the population before people get sick.
Well, let's take that then. I think that's a great segue. Let's take that to Sinai, Lightbridge. And so we hear community care. We talk wraparound services. Folks have heard a lot of topics today. I've been stepping in and out of the conference. Tell folks what Sinai is doing to make this concept of community care reality and what it means for the community.
Sure, absolutely. And I can give you many examples of areas that we are able to assist our communities with that because of this waiver, because of the way the whole system is set up. As an example, we want to make sure that patients who've left the hospital are able to get to their physician's appointments after they've been seen in the hospital and get their medication. If you look at reasons why patients come back to the hospital in what's called readmissions, the two biggest reasons are they don't keep the appointment with the physician that they should have, and they don't get the medication that was prescribed in the hospital. So we have a number of programs to address both of those things. We spend almost $30,000 a month on Uber. That's over $300,000 a year in getting patients to the doctor's office, because it's a much better place for them to be seen by their primary care physician than in the emergency room of a hospital.
And that we're hearing that globally.
Right.
All of you want the emergency room to be an emergency room.
Absolutely.
And not a care-all for all sorts of problems.
100%. And so that transportation, if you are someone who's living in the city and you may have to take two buses and walk for 20 minutes, you may not keep that appointment. But by providing that transportation, you're now able to go to the physician's office, get the care that you need, and remain in the community.
How do I access that? How do I find out about that if I'm a community member? How do I know that I can Uber to to the doctor's
office? Well, those programs are when you're part of, been seen in the hospital, or that you have been care in one of the programs, and we provide a lot of information to all of our patients
when
they get discharged. It's outreach, exactly. And we have a wide range of community health workers who in the community doing that. We have another program, for example, called our Hubs program, where we provide stability for seniors in their homes. That does two things. We look at things around not tripping and fixing the carpets and fixing the fact that they may not need a stove or an air conditioner, whatever it is, because that does two things. It keeps them at home and stabilizes the neighborhood, so they're not leaving the neighborhood and leaving an empty, vacant home in the neighborhood, and it also allows them to get the right care in the right location.
We can't do health care in America, and we've done it with everyone that's come on today, without asking what role hospitals today in the region and the United States play in terms of helping us combat the opioid crisis in the United States. For example, at Sinai and LifeBridge, what role do you see hospitals playing?
From the entire continuum of where that crisis comes from, we've put a number of programs in place to address that. So whether it's patients who are coming to the emergency room with overdose, having peer counseling, folks who've struggled themselves can advise them, programs around Narcan in the community to address it, in terms of physician prescribing practices and making sure that alternatives to opioids are used throughout the care continuum, education. So all of those things are very important roles that hospitals have to play in the addressing of the epidemic.
Bob, thank the you. One thing I've learned here is what an incredible role hospitals play in any community. Sinai, I come and visit Neil sometimes. I come up 83. You're in the city, but I've learned so much more. My wife's had leukemia twice, and we live in downtown Baltimore, right? So we went to Hopkins, 1.6 miles from where we live. That would be a real challenge in a lot of other places anywhere in America, let alone in the state of Maryland. And you learn about how hospitals become such an important part of Cumberland or Salisbury or Easton or anywhere in our state that's not Baltimore, right?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, hospitals are major economic engines in those communities. They employ lots of people and good jobs.
And save others.
And they save others, and they're key to the community. While I live in Montgomery County primarily, I also spend a lot of time on the Eastern Shore, so you just rattled off the names of a number of shore
communities. But if you get sick on the Eastern Shore, let's say something,
right.
Have an accident.
Right. Appendectomy on the shore the first year we were...
You slip in the shower. Anything that happens like that.
And
I always feel like I can walk to Mercy. We can get to Maryland. We can get
right. Well, in Baltimore, there's a tremendous concentration of great healthcare resources. In more rural areas, it's a little more spread out, but we've developed interesting techniques to get people to care. Telemedicine is a new-ish kind of thing that lets people communicate with providers from wherever they are, lets providers communicate to specialists, communicate to smaller hospitals from the city without having to go there. And so, our hospitals are innovating. leveraging technology, new techniques of care in order to make care great across the state.
Bob, we're probably, and I know you guys aren't political pundits and you don't want to be political pundits, but as we've spent the morning here, these issues are nationwide issues. And we're now, we're not going to have Republican debates until we get to the fall. But we've had probably 8, 9, 10, whatever it is now, Democratic debate. I haven't heard candidates for president talking about these health care issues. I hear them talking about health care access, but I don't hear them talking about things about underserved areas, community health care. Why is that, and how do we raise that awareness? It doesn't seem like it's part of the national discussion, and I can't think of anything much more important.
Well, you already said, and I'll agree, I'm not a political pundit, but they go with simple messages that resonate with the largest possible number of people. A lot of what they say is based on polling.
You think in your heart people care about these issues?
Absolutely. These are the real critical issues.
Well, it comes to your doorstep.
Right.
Absolutely.
My wife was diagnosed with cancer 5-6 years ago. All of a sudden, insurance and everything about that and how to get her to the hospital. You don't count on, it's like the Ravens the other day. So you don't wait. When the car crash happens, no one's prepared for that, right?
And
we're all going to need it at some point. Hopefully we don't, but I haven't met anybody that's made it 50, 60, 70 years on the planet without needing something in your system.
Our hospitals, Jonathan at his hospital and all of our hospitals are really working on community outreach, education, benefits to the community that are not what you'd expect a hospital to be doing, in order to make people healthier, housing, nutrition, working on a whole range of topics that that matter to people's health.
Dr. Ringo, last thing for you in Baltimore, because I'm a Baltimore guy. In serving Baltimore City, what are the biggest challenges for Sinai and maybe for LifeBridge as well, things that you'd like to see improve 3, 4, 5 years from now?
Well, look, obviously, as Bob was saying, we see ourselves as partners with everything that's going on in the community, from housing to education to crime, and those are all things that we're addressing at every opportunity. So we have programs like Safe Streets programs. We have folks who have been former members of gangs or who have been perpetrators of violence who have now left that lifestyle. And when a victim of violence or another perpetrator comes into the emergency room, we get those folks together, get them to help move them away from that, and really have a major impact on crime in our communities.
Well, it's thanks so much for touching on that, because one of the things Nestor and I have learned over the past few months, and we've been talking a lot about crime in Baltimore City and turning the city around, Safe Streets works.
Absolutely.
I mean, we have data, and it's what Nestor and I sometimes get frustrated. We have real data that shows in those Safe Street zones, real violence, homicides drops dramatically.
Yes.
So talk more even in detail about what role Sinai plays in Safe Streets.
So, we have a number of Safe Streets programs, not only at Sinai directly, but now with the move of Bon Secours, now Grace Medical Center, into the LifeBridge family, our Safe Streets programs and the oversight of that is continuing. But what we've also done is when we did our community health needs assessment, all hospitals in Maryland do this on a regular basis to see what the community's needs are. We identified violence and violence interruption as a key need for our community. So we formed the LifeBridge Center for Hope. We took the Baltimore Child Abuse Center, because sexual violence against children is a major impact on health, and they've got data to show that when you have adverse childhood experiences, that'll impact your health later on in life. So it's that preventive aspect, addressing that. Our domestic violence programs, our elderly violence programs, our Safe Streets programs, put that all together in our new Center for Hope to really address violence interruption at every stage of the lifestyle.
If you're listening on the radio, we're with Dr. Jonathan Ringo, president of Sinai Hospital, Bob Atlas, president of the Maryland Hospital Association. Dr. Ringo, if Nestor and I stepped away,
yes,
and we brought the governor in and he's sitting here, and we have Senate President Ferguson and House Speaker Adrian Jones, they come in and they take our place, what would you tell them you need this session in the next 90 days?
Well, I firstly say thank you for everything they've done in helping the waiver grow in Maryland, because we really are, having practiced healthcare in other states, we're in a fantastic position in Maryland to deliver the care that the communities need. That being said, we need help to address the medical liability crisis that we have in Maryland. We need assistance in making sure that the programs that we've spoken about already today, addressing the needs of the communities, can continue. And recognizing, as Bob said, that hospitals are major healthcare engine for economic engine for Maryland. We're often the largest employer in our cities and states, and let's work together to keep these wonderful systems going.
We always drill down. You said we need to address the medical liability issue in Maryland. Again, yeah. I'm in my car.
Yeah.
I said, sounds important, but I don't know what it is. Give us the Four Dummies version of what that issue is and why it matters.
So often when patients have something that happens in the hospital, even when there was nothing that could have been done to prevent that, there's a feeling and a need that we need to get someone to pay for that. And often the hospitals will look at, well, you're going to pay for it. And if there's a case like a $200 million verdict, well, that money is going to come from money that could have been spent helping the community because there's a finite pot available.
So how do we address that? What's the answer to that?
I think a more realistic assessment of where of the needs, of the actual needs of the patients, because we want to meet those needs of the patients. Whatever the cause was, we want to make sure that people stay happy and healthy, but not overly compensate other parties who may not have been involved in the specific case.
Now, Bob, you're going to be living in these halls not too far from where we are for the next 90 days. You'll have had a lot of milkshakes down at Chicken Roots.
Oh, God, no.
What do you need?
I'm going to get one of those.
We'll take you down there before we leave. What do you need from the General Assembly?
Well, what Jonathan said, first and foremost, we've got a liability, I would say, crisis. I hate to overuse that word, but it really applies here in Maryland. We're a clear outlier in a bad way relative to the nation in terms of the structure of our liability laws. And the care is good. It's not about poor care. It's about good care and an unfair legal system that is working against really the best interests of the patients.
Is it a deterrent for doctors to practice here?
We certainly hear stories that physicians are thinking about being in other states because of this situation.
What are some models in other states that work better than what we're doing?
So when it doesn't go through this through a typical antagonistic legal process, but that you have either a special trust that administer funds or you have special healthcare courts that administer funds, where it's done in an impartial manner and you don't have this antagonistic process, but you have everyone around the table looking towards the best interest of the patient.
What's the community, and I know where you guys got to get back to the conference, what's the community outreach, whether you call it outreach, wraparound, give it whatever name, what's the program you're the most proud of at Sinai and LifeBridge? You say, man.
He's smiling.
I'm so proud of that.
That's a really tough question because I'm just proud.
Is that like asking which child you like the
exactly.
best?
Exactly. That is a perfect analogy. I'm just so proud of the amazing people that work at LifeBridge, the incredible people who live every single day, day in, day out, doing nothing else other than trying to help people get healthy and live better lives.
I can't let you get away, and we may run over. Bonsecours is near and dear to my heart. I think
yes.
I said to you before we came on, as a young doc, my dad was a resident there. I spent a lot of time as a little boy walking those streets on Pulaski Street with two uncles who were docs there. Talk to us about the LifeBridge commitment to Bonsecours and what that's going to mean to that underserved community.
Sure, absolutely. There's a community, if you look across the state, that really, really needs additional services. So when we're coming in there, we're going to be doing a couple of different things. We're looking at what services the community needs, putting in increased programs around pediatrics. They haven't had pediatric services for a long time. We're putting them back. Putting OBGYN services in, dialysis services, community health, the violence prevention we spoke about, capital investment, building a whole new ambulatory medical center, and redoing the entire emergency room, working with community partners to understand housing, cleanliness, safe street, everything that we've spoken about, putting resources into that community and putting a lot of dollars behind that as well.
It's amazing when I hear you talk.
It's about people investing in Baltimore, right?
And Nestor, you're familiar with it, but when I think of that community in West Baltimore not having the services that you're talking about, not having...
Can't have a baby there.
Not being able to go there and have a baby,
right.
My head almost explodes. So this could be transformational for that West Baltimore neighborhood, right?
Right. Look, we're not talking about actually delivering the baby there, but all the OB services that are provided until that time.
Prenatal care,
absolutely, and postnatal care with pediatrics. One of the things, as we were saying before, the pot of money that is available for healthcare is finite, so we have to be excellent stewards of those resources. It doesn't make sense to put another intensive intensive care unit where Bonsecours is. You have Maryland down the street, Hopkins and Sinai, all in very close distance. But what that community really needs are primary care services, as we said, OB, prenatal, postnatal, pediatrics, dialysis, hypertension, all those kind of services, and we're going to be putting a huge investment in those services in that area.
Wait, really making a difference. Bob, before we let you go, we've asked everyone today, folks out there now, they're listening, they're paying attention, they say, man, I want to keep tabs on this for the next 90 days. What's the best way for them to keep tabs on what you guys are fighting for and get involved and call their legislator?
Well, there's a campaign called Caring for Maryland, Caring number 4 MD. There's a website for that, caringformd.org.
Caringformd.org.
Okay. And feel free to
Nestor's
go
jumping
there.
On his phone. He loves to pull this stuff up.
Yeah, I like to pull stuff up, see what's there.
Right. And the point is that, you know, we need to make sure that people understand, so sometimes people get a little distracted, that what we're about is really caring for the people of Maryland. We're here as a healthcare resource to keep people healthy as much as possible, and when they need care because they aren't healthy, we take care of them. We treat them to get them better. And
108,000 employees. Is that right?
There's 108,000 people who work directly for hospitals in Maryland. There's another about equal number who
61
work,
hospitals, right?
61 hospitals and health.
Listen
systems.
To this. Nestor said he was going to get
I'm
smarter.
Learning.
Everybody,
I'm learning.
It's a graduate course.
It was on the press release, but I don't use
Nestor. We
this
came
has been a great day.
It may have been one of the most significant days that we spent in the past year talking about an issue that affects
touch
every
your
family
life directly,
every
mine
single
this week.
Person in Maryland. I thank Dr. Ringo and Bob Atlas for coming down. Nestor, where are we as we wrap this up?
We're down here in Annapolis. We don't get down here often enough. Maybe we should just a little bit
more. Got to head down here more often.
Some old Baltimore Positive guests like Damien O'Doherty and Bill Ferguson and some others as well. We appreciate y'all coming by. Make sure you say hello to Neil Meltzer.
Will do. Thanks
for
having us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
We're signing off from Annapolis. He's Don. I'm Nestor. We're Baltimore Positive. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. We never stop telling great Baltimore stories of hope.